This conference is being recorded.
Okay, well, welcome everyone. I'm pasting the agenda for this meeting to the IRC. So the main point of today's meeting is sort of a share-a-thon about OSGI and our experiences so far with it. We talked a little bit about it last week, and I had also invited Ian, I forget his last name now, from the Sakai project to come on and share some experience. He wasn't able to make it today, but I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk with him in the future. But just to give a quick overview on the Sakai side, I don't have the greatest depth of information there, but I do understand Sakai, in their architecture, decided to basically embed Sakai services inside Apache Sling. And they were doing that with straight OSGI rather than Spring DM, because at the time that they were sort of starting the K2 project, that's their next generation kernel. It seemed like, I think one of the reasonings I heard was around Spring DM not being quite as well supported across different containers, but I have no idea if that's true, or if it's true today, I should say. So maybe we can shed light on that topic a little bit and talk about it sort of at the end of this chat, along with anything else that comes up. What we had identified last week were at least a couple folks in the group had some experience with OSGI, and so Bill and Andrew had agreed to give us a report on their OSGI and Spring DM experience so far with DuraCloud. And Eddie also had planned on doing some investigation to sort of dig into what it would mean to bundle Fedora as an OSGI module. So hopefully we'll get good reports on both of those fronts and maybe have some good discussion afterwards. Eddie, why don't you start off on your stuff and just give us kind of an overview of what you've looked into so far and anything you've learned out of that process.
So actually, I ended up knocking my head against a few walls on this. So I didn't actually get a successful wrapped instance of Fedora working. I only got to spend about almost a full day on it. So I think I'm actually not sure exactly what all the problems are, because I've independently done a couple sort of Hello World sort of level Spring DM apps. One is a web app, one just straight up. Really like basically just a Podio wrapped as a bundle. And trying to mix and match all the stuff I'd had in one palm to the other didn't seem to play very nicely. So I'm not really sure yet what the problem is. I don't have a chance to debug it all. So I don't really have anything good to report on that front, other than I'm still optimistic that, you know, I think it's basically build problems that are mucking things up right now more than anything else. And I don't know yet what the problem is. I think as far as the general approach goes that we've talked about, I still think it's a pretty reasonable approach to take, which is just to create one giant bundle. I think the other thing that there was some question about was sort of which application model to follow for this project. So, you know, whether or not it should be, I guess, like in the Sakai K2 case of doing just straight up OSGI, whether we should be using Spring VM. Some of the other ones I've heard about from talking to some people was the OSGI declarative services. I think Apache has one called iPojo. I haven't built anything at all with any of them other than Spring VM and just doing a straight OSGI in bulk. So I can't really compare other than what I've read or what people have said. I don't know. I guess for my part, as nice as it would be to sort of do a thorough sort of delving of say, at least Spring VM and OSGI declarative services and iPojo, and I think there's another one I've heard of, whose name escapes me now. I'm pretty okay with going ahead with the prototype in Spring VM, unless other people have sort of reservations about doing that versus using any of these other frameworks. I mean, I think the declarative services has been around longer. My impression from talking to some of the developers I met in Zurich was people were going, or at least playing with Spring VM anyway, people who were already using declarative services or even switching wholesale anyway for projects that where they could or that could justify it. But I didn't hear anyone sort of pushing back on the choice if you were, especially if you were starting out with using Spring VM, especially if you were already a Spring shop, which, you know, we're not, but we've talked about doing. So
yeah.
I think just that alone is already sort of good momentum. And I've mentioned before, I mean, you know, sort of getting the sort of OSGI blessing as the blueprint service, as the two sort of converge, I think that still puts us on a good track as far as, you know, picking an application model that's, you know, going to be well supported in the future and, well, basically standard. So, I don't know. I mean, if Bill or, I don't know who else has done anything yet so far with OSGI and what, but I mean, I guess, you know, if Bill and Andrew have anything to report as far as their experiences or frustrations using Spring VM then versus doing something otherwise, I guess that would be a great data point to have.
Yeah, well, I think you make a good point, Eddie, about if basically Spring VM, and Bill and I will talk about it in a moment, but if you are already using Spring and you want to leverage Spring facilities, then Spring VM seems to be a good fit. But by itself, you know, like maybe it's not necessary if that's all you're using it for is Spring VM. It enables the other injections and aspects and other things that Spring brings to the table. But if you're only doing it, if you're only bringing Spring into the equation to use Spring VM, then you know, maybe not.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not really, unfortunately, I don't have anything more substantive, really, that I feel like I can share at this point. It may just be a few more hours or a couple more days to sort of sort out whatever the build problems are.
Okay. Well, good to you at least took a first shot. If you identified anything specific during the build process, you said that was making things, you suspected maybe the build stuff was kind of making things difficult right now. Certainly if there's anything in that you identify, we can maybe talk about fixing it on the mailing list.
Yeah, I'll I think I'll bang my head against it a little longer, and then if I don't make any decent progress relatively soon, start posting some help requests.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, at least from what I've seen also, getting your ducks in a row and with OSGI just, you know, in general, takes some time in order to get builds to work just right. So when you're adding in the Fedora dependencies also, then yeah, it's understandable how, you know, it could take a little bit of extra effort to get that to work out.
Yeah, I don't see any sort of theoretical sort of stumbling block or, you know, or like architectural stumbling block to just doing this sort of exercise of creating a giant bundle for Fedora. I mean, there isn't anything about our application that you know, prevents that. So I do think that it's mostly just putting in the time and ironing out whatever sort of build problems or whatever that either I've created or that are already there or something that are just causing this to foobar at this point.
Yeah, I think my experiences have been the same. Like, you know, like OSGI works, but it seems like getting everything working the way you want it to is kind of a slog, and there's certainly some ramp up required.
Yeah.
So for one, I mean, it's when you're translating a project is one thing, and then the other is in general, right? Just new developers to new frameworks typically have trouble. But what I'm kind of wondering is, you know, given our experience so far, is maybe part of the value of OSGI isn't the ease of development, or is it just something, you know, it's got a fairly steep initial learning curve, and once you get there, you can be pretty effective. But it's kind of mixed in right now for me, at least, with the fact that we're kind of reconceptualizing Fedora a little bit, so it's not like we're just writing Hello World here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's maybe some of both there, Chris. That, you know, once you get ramped up and you know what you're doing, then, you know, you can certainly move a lot faster. But there's still a certain amount of just having to work through, you know, especially dealing with jars that aren't OSGI enabled. You know, having just to deal with all the dependencies and make sure that you get everything all set up, even if you know exactly what you're doing, it just takes time. So I mean, there's a certain amount of, you know, certainly if you know what you're doing, you'll be able to get there faster, but it's not a quick process.
One of the things I noticed, and I wasn't able to dig into this yet, but so the Sakai, I posted that link to Sakai's article, your first day with Sakai K2, and there was, near the end of the article, there was actually a demo, simplest possible OSGI bundle, so I'll copy that link. But this might be a way to address that, you know, once we get to that point where we're comfortable with it. I mean, the goal is that this makes writing modules and add-ons for Fedora a more standard and hopefully a simpler process overall. So, I mean, one of the things we can do to speak to that is provide little template projects for people.
Yeah, well, I think once we get, especially once we get things broken out into, you know, various OSGI projects, you know, just for our internal use,
that will give us a sort of default template to start with, and people will also be able to look at those to see examples of how it's done.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're a long ways off from that, because even when we get to the point, like of breaking Fedora apart into a set of bundles, I think then we're going to have to do the exercise of, we'll either break it into bundles, and then we'll sort of do refactoring, or as part of breaking up into bundles, we'll be doing some more refactoring of the interfaces themselves that we were sort of talking about last week, where, especially where we want to figure out some points of sort of common interest between Fedora and DSpace, we'll want to have that sorted out before we start sort of encouraging the community to develop bundles against, interfaces that we're actually thinking are going to be changing anyway. And then I think there's, the other exercise of looking at other OSGI applications that, looking at the interfaces of other OSGI applications to see where, again, we might need to rethink what we're doing. Because there are other CMSs, right, that are written using OSGI. And so there, too, there's like this, you can imagine this sort of, it's a point of convergence, basically, where then all of a sudden you get to use, the bundles that are being used by, whatever JSR 170 CMS with Fedora or vice versa. And so I think, again, we need to think about what interfaces we're interested in publishing and writing against. So I think getting to the point where we're able to sort of publicly say, here's the template for writing a bundle to do X, Y, or Z services for Fedora is probably a ways off. And that's not to say that you have to go full bore on doing the refactoring and rethinking of interfaces, but I just think we have to at least spend some time on that before we're ready to invite the public into spending cycles doing development.
Yeah. I think you're right, Eddie, on getting people, we don't want to lead people down the wrong path with module integrations that might be completely irrelevant, after some serious refactoring. On the other hand, we might be able to get some help with things if we've got some documentation out there in terms of just, in looking at the Sakai thing. Here's the simplest possible bundle, and just do something really stupid and simple that isn't setting up a dependency. I think you're definitely right on the the fact that along with this process, it's not just the technology of how the stuff is hanging together. It's what's the next step of Fedora modularization, and what pieces can we sort of maybe share with other systems out there, and that some of those questions are going to be like a while out, to answer. But
right.
Getting ourselves positioned so that we can, when such a decision is made, that we can sort of know that have sort of a clear path on at least what architecture, what kind of plug-in architecture we're using will hopefully make that process simpler. I wanted to switch over Andrew and Bill's experiences so far, and I noticed, Andrew, that you had posted a notes, OSGI notes page on the wiki.
I think Bill and I.
Yeah, these are just sort of some bullets of. Some of it is kind of basic, just OSGI stuff. which, you know, give a little bit of reference to maybe those who are looking at this, you know, without all that much knowledge of OSGI. So, you know, just sort of what is OSGI with the dynamic module system for Java. And then, you know, the purpose is allowing us to break things into modules and have those modules have, you know, clearly defined dependencies and services that are provided spelled out very specifically, and having versioning support for both the dependencies and the services. And then sort of just the way OSGI apps run are inside one of the OSGI containers, and currently there are three primary containers: Equinox, Apaches, Felix, and Knopflerfish. And they have different levels of compliance with the OSGI spec. Equinox is fully compliant, and Apache Felix does most of it, and Knopflerfish does everything, but it seems like it doesn't go quite as far as Equinox. But the nice thing is that there are quite a few different bundles that are provided by, you know, say Felix, that will run in any of the other, you know, containers. So things are nicely portable between each of the three. And of course, the idea is that it's all dynamic, so you can install and uninstall, start and stop bundles as needed. And then just the clarification that, you know, in a general sense, an OSGI bundle is the same as a jar. It just includes a manifest that includes all of the service and dependency, and just input and output sort of requirements for the bundle. So that's sort of just a general OSGI, what it is. And
yeah, I mean that's a particularly important point, is that, yeah, the jar file artifacts for any particular, you know, that's a bundle for any particular, you know, artifact is, you know, it's just a jar file and there's nothing special about it, with the exception of in the manifest it defines, you know, like what other services or what other dependencies it requires and what services it exports, or even what packages, you know, basically types, what classes it exports. But otherwise, you know, the jar can be used in any sort of normal context.
Huh. Yeah. Right, yeah. So you can use an OSGI bundle as just a regular jar, and there's no...
So are producers of the major libraries, like a lot of like the common stuff at Apache, are they starting to just put their jars together with OSGI info inside?
I mean, I've seen quite a few. I don't have any examples off the top of my head.
One example is Spring. I mean, obviously they have a good reason to go that direction. But if you look at just the Spring jars that are in Maven Central, they all have manifests.
Okay, like, so the Spring Beans or whatever
Spring
sub...
Beans, Spring Core, Spring JDBC, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also, there's several initiatives out there that are trying to, you know, make the conversion for you know, just a wide range of jars. So the Spring Source is, you know, sort of the one we've been using primarily. And that has a pretty good list of sort of the standard bundles, and it actually has a really nice interface that will tell you what all of the dependencies are for each jar, and, you know, lets you download all the OSGI-fied jars. And there's a link to that in the references. The Spring Source repository. The,
So are people, are the authors of some of the libraries out there, I mean, besides Spring itself, generally, like, producing an artifact out of their build, which is, like, an OSGI-compatible or Spring DM-compatible jar? Or are they just kind of...
I haven't heard of that happening. I haven't heard of that happening too much. Sounds like there are a lot more individual efforts to convert existing jars into bundles. So there are repositories. I mean, I think Spring has a repository of a bunch of these things, too. And there are a few other bundle repositories out there that it, so people have done the work, but I haven't heard of it sort of happening from the actual projects themselves.
Because that could make things difficult. I mean, it's the same thing of, you know, yeah, somebody did a Maven packaging of Fedora a couple years ago, but, you know, because we didn't, it never really got updated as part of our build. So it kind of makes me think if people aren't doing this as sort of a matter of course, then some of the versions might be outdated, or, I mean, is that, like, I'm looking at that Spring Source URL, Andrew, that you posted.
Mm-hmm.
I would kind of expect this stuff to lag behind the official releases if it's a different group of people who are responsible.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
that's
pretty much
been...
Yeah, I mentioned after I went to that OSGI conference that there was a breakout session where a lot of people were talking about what it would take to create sort of an official OSGI Alliance-sponsored bundle repository to be equivalent to Maven Central. And they were just sort of gauging interest if it was something, you know, how would they get funding, you know, would people support some kind of subscription model and so on and so forth. And just because there are a lot of, you know, people have created their own bundle repositories to deal with their own specific needs around this. But I think if they end up getting something like Maven Central going, that'll be a great thing to be able to take advantage of later. I think at this point, we're largely going to have to rely on creating our own bundles or...
Yeah.
I think, you know, in large part for any of the popular libraries, people are going to have already made the effort, and then there'll be, I mean, like you pointed out, Chris, I mean, there's going to be some kind of lag time between new releases of libraries and before the bundles get updated. But
there's lag time in how often we update them in the core, anyway.
Exactly. I mean, I was looking at that last week as far as, you know, what libraries we've got in Fedora that need some updating anyway. We're definitely been lagging on that.
Yeah. So I guess what I was kind of thinking about was, does this fact of some of these lower level libraries, I mean, like Apache Commons IO, well, I don't know, that might be the most recent version.
I was just going to say, so I just looked at Maven Central, and it just happened to be Apache Commons IO, and downloaded the jar file they have there. And if you explode it and look at its manifest, it is a Maven bundle, or excuse me, a OSGI bundle.
Oh, cool. So I guess in the escape route, if we can't find a version of something that we depend on that's available in as an OSGI bundle, then we can certainly include that as part of our bundle that we're building, right? So declare it as a Maven dependency, the most recent version of that library, but then it's kind of just a private piece of our bundle. Is that
I'd say we'd be probably more likely to want to repackage it with a manifest.
So,
that bundle's going to
turn it into a bundle itself.
Right.
And then that would mean maybe we'd put it in our own repository, or would
we're
we
gonna
just...
We're going to have to do this with Maven anyway.
There
are quite a few libraries out there that don't have Maven packaging.
Yeah, the ones that we depend on, I don't know if, percentage-wise, but I suspect, as much as possible, we want our dependencies to be put together by somebody else. And it seems like Maven provides, or Maven Central has a pretty big collection as compared to where the OSGI bundle repositories are at this point. But
I think that's also, getting steam too. I mean, with Maven 3 becoming an OSGI app as well, that's going to pick up a pretty good head of steam as far as people creating appropriate manifests for the existing Maven packages anyway. So, if we find things are sort of slow or lacking now, I don't think that's a situation that's only going to improve. I think even by the end of the year. I wouldn't be overly stressed about that point. I think it's certainly a tractable problem, and I think it's a problem that's going to, by and large, start getting more and more resolved by itself without even all that much extra effort on our part.
Yeah. All right. It seems interesting that, one approach to setting up sort of OSGI bundle repositories is just to kind of extend what Maven repositories do anyway. Seems like it could be pretty reasonable, especially if people, and I suspect also as we get further into this, more and more people will natively be posting their own stuff as OSGI bundles. There just has to be a way to denote that, in a way that Maven can understand.
So I guess to answer your question originally is, we'll probably have to be putting some of these in our local Maven repository in order to be able to use them as OSGI bundles, at least for a while. So I guess just continuing on the list here, we can just talk about Spring DM a bit. So as Andrew mentioned already, the Spring DM gives us the ability to use Spring inside an OSGI bundle, and it allows us to use Spring's capabilities to do some of the setup and configuration for OSGI. As Andrew pointed out, the real point of using Spring DM is if you want to use Spring anyway. But it does some nice things for you in that you have the capability of essentially writing code that doesn't know anything about OSGI or Spring, and using the Spring XML to do the appropriate configuration and wrapping to make the OSGI make up the OSGI bundle. So I mean, you can do OSGI as noted. You can do OSGI services that are injected into the Spring beans, and Spring sort of gives you a way to get access to everything else that's running in the container, all the other OSGI services that are running in the container, so you can know about what's available and make use of those services.
Yeah, so I'd like to just note, so, I mean, just for clarity, so, you know, we have these various OSGI containers, right, the Equinox or Felix or Knopfler Fish or whatever, and, you know, the idea is that you just throw a whole bunch of jar files into that container, or, you know, like when the container starts up, it knows about these jar files, and it basically deploys them into a registry. So all of the services and types that are exported, the registry knows about. And each of those independent jar files has clearly defined dependencies as well as sort of exported services. And so if a particular jar file that is a bundle says it has these dependencies, but those dependencies don't exist within the container, then it doesn't work, right? Then that bundle won't deploy or won't be active. So, you know, that's a little bit of the challenge, is making sure that you have all the right bundles in the container so that your stuff works. But one of the things that Spring DM does is basically there's a special bundle that's in the container. It's a Spring bundle that its whole job is whenever a bundle comes into the container, it looks at it real quickly, and it looks for a particular folder inside of the meta INF directory. And so basically, it's looking for other Spring-enabled bundles. And so, you know, bundles that are Spring DM-enabled, basically they're just kind of like regular, you know, like an OSGI bundle. It's the same as a regular jar file. It just has this manifest stuff in it. Likewise, a Spring DM bundle is just like a jar file. You know, no difference. It just has some an extra directory in the meta INF directory of the jar. And so basically when a Spring-enabled bundle shows up in the container, you have this running service from Spring that inspects it and says, here we have a Spring bundle. And it goes ahead and, you know, for those of you who are familiar with Spring, it creates like the application context for that bundle. And it does all the wiring based on, you know, the file that is found inside of that Spring directory of the jar. So interacting with the registry, the OSGI registry, is, you know, there's a little bit of work involved there if you do it natively, you know, without having Spring help you, in terms of identifying services and then getting a reference to that service and then using that service within your own personal bundle. Likewise, you know, like for if you're providing a service, you have to, if you're just doing this natively without Spring, you have to contact the registry and say, okay, you know, I have the service and here's the interface, and you go ahead and, you know, make it available to the rest of the container. But Spring, it does a couple things for you. One is it goes ahead and generates the manifest that defines what you need and what you're exporting. And then also it allows you to go ahead and wire in, or, you know, basically import services. It interacts with the registry and allows you to go ahead and import services. So, for example, you know, we have an interface of, like, on the DuraCloud side, we have an interface that just sort of defines like a compute, a DuraCloud type compute service, and it's just a, you know, real simple interface. And so we have a Spring bundle that comes in, and it says, okay, well, just in the container, all of the services that comply with this interface, go ahead and give me a list of them. And so that whole interaction with the registry is abstracted away, and SpringDM handles that. And in the actual object that gets created by Spring, it just has injected a list of all those services. Just kind of expounding upon a little bit of what SpringDM does for you.
I guess I'll throw in a few things also, based on what Andrew was saying. The actual each container, Equinox, Felix, or Nostrofish, have kind of their own way of knowing all the different bundles that you want to be starting inside that container, and there's a certain amount of work that goes into making that container aware of the things that it should be starting, as far as, you know, here are the bundles that you should be looking at, and those bundles don't necessarily all have to be in one place. For Equinox, for instance, there's one file that just has a list of these are all the different bundles that I want you to grab and put into the container and start up if you can. And then Felix and AlphaFish just have slightly different mechanisms for doing that. So there's a couple different bundles that are available out there that do some of that work for you. You know, there's one that essentially watch. It does a watch on a folder that, you know, anytime you drop something into a folder, it'll pick it up and say, okay, I'm going to deploy this as a bundle, you know, inside the container. And then at that point, that's when the Spring extender, which is the Spring bundle that Andrew was talking about, will look inside of it and say, oh, this is a Spring enabled bundle. So I need to, you know, start up the you know, Spring container, essentially, to be able to handle that. So that's, I guess, what I'm getting to is there's kind of there's a reason why some of the tools that are listed here are available, and one that's not actually listed but is part of PAX Construct is PAX Runner, and that essentially its point is to be able to pull all the parts, all the bundles that you want in your application into whatever container. So it's set up so that you can just specify on the command line which container you want to deploy to, and it'll do the right thing in order to get all those bundles pushed in correctly. And then
is that a runtime thing? I mean, like the Spring extender, it's after the fact, after you put together a Spring DM compatible thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The PAX tools are all just scripts that run in order to, you know, build up different various files and start up the containers. So the PAX Construct tool is primarily for like creating projects and then you know, doing things like importing you know, existing bundles into your project so that when you do a run, it will deploy all the right bundles for you.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned, Bill, about Felix's file install bundle is that was one of the drivers that brought us to OSGI on the DuraCloud side in the first place, was this concept of, you know, we have an application that's running, and, you know, like sometime, you know, like an hour or a week later, you know, like someone's looking on the web interface and it's like, hey, you know, like here's a service that I might be interested in, and they hit a checkbox, and they, you know, like you want that service then to be active and running. And so one, you know, there are certainly lots of approaches for achieving that sort of thing, but this file install, actually, send a link here. The file install basically, it allows you you know, say to just stream over a jar file, a bundle, and if it lands in a certain directory, then dynamically this file install bundle, you know, realizes it's there, goes ahead and publishes it into the container, and if it happens, like Bill said, if it happens to be a Spring bundle, then also the Spring extender recognizes it as a Spring bundle and does all the wiring, Spring wiring that, you know, you would expect it to do. And wham, the service is just available. You didn't have to restart anything or, you know, hit any sort of reset or anything. It just, you know, you drop a jar file into a directory and wham, it's there. And likewise, you delete it and it does all the shutdown for you for that service.
Assuming, of course, you have all the dependencies, right?
What's that?
Assuming, of course, that you have all the dependencies, right?
Yeah.
In order for it to start.
And, yeah, and those you can send over as well.
Right.
So it acts as kind of a simplified registry. I mean, you're basically dumping the stuff in there, and instead of, like with the OSGI containers themselves, instead of going through a web interface to do stuff, you kind of just, you know, set up a script to deploy something if your application wants to deploy it on a remote server, which is the DuraCloud case, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it just, it's dead simple. I mean, to deploy stuff. Is that dependent on using Spring DM or not?
No, it's
this,
not. This Felix thing?
Okay.
No.
The file deploying?
Yeah, and, no,
it
not
doesn't
at all.
Have anything to do with yeah, Spring DM.
Okay. Cool.
So I guess the next tool there is just a note that the one thing Spring doesn't actually do for you is create the manifests when you create your project and have all the Spring XML files and all that set up for you, then you don't want to have to create your manifest by hand, because there's kind of a lot of rules to it, and you could fairly easily mess that up doing it by hand. So there's a couple different Maven plugins that are available that will look at your Maven dependencies and will create your it'll look both at your Maven dependencies and it'll look at the at the actual Java files and figure out all of the packages that you need to import and export. And the two listed there, the Apache Felix, there's one Apache Felix bundle, and there's a Spring Source bundle or bundle.
Bundle or with an right.
Maven plugins. Sorry.
Yeah.
What's that, Eddie?
Oh no, I was just saying I thought it was Bundler, right? With an O.
Yeah. No, I was saying, yeah. I said bundles, and what they're actually Maven plugins. To do that work. Yes, it is. It's called Bundler. And the Felix plugin is based on the bind.
BND.
Yeah, BND tool. So essentially what those do is, you know, just create the manifest for you and stick it in the jar file when you do your, you know, Maven install. So you don't actually have to have your manifest in your source at all. You just when you build it adds it for you. So it's definitely a nice utility. And then the last tool on the list is just, there's a couple different ways you can support integration testing, which in this case is just meaning pushing, you know, you want something that will start up a container and push all your bundles in there, and then run your tests in the container. So, but Spring has a way to do this, and the PAX exam tool has a way to essentially create a bundle out of your integration tests and deploy it into the container with all the rest of your application and run your tests there.
Which is nice.
Yeah. We haven't really tried out the PAX exam yet, just read about it so far. Spring tool, Andrew, set up a couple tests using that. And this seems to work well. The only problem with that is that you sort of
bless you.
You have to do a sort of on your own listing of all of the dependency jars or dependency packages in a separate file in order for it to know what to deploy, which is seems unnecessary considering it's all already there for you in Maven. But I guess the Spring implementation doesn't want to necessarily depend on Maven. I suppose that's their point. Anyway, so I've yet to explore PAX exam, but I imagine that'll happen here in the next week or so.
Yeah, so one, the sort of tying in the integration test to what's mentioned on the wiki page there under the miscellaneous section. So, for example, you can deploy a WAR file into the OSGI container. And there's support for basically running a Tomcat inside the container, or likewise Jetty. And so, you know, we've had success in terms of integration testing. You know, so deploying a WAR file bundle, which then runs on, you know, whatever port, and then having the integration test go ahead and you know, make a request on that port and, you know, basically, you know, interact with it. So the integration tests classes itself get bundled up, thrown into the container, and then go ahead and interact with the web app.
Hey, so I think I'm a little out of date here on what's going on the Jura Cloud side. So what exactly are you, or how far have you gotten along with this OSGI work with Jura Cloud? I mean, this wasn't even something I was aware of prior to today. So,
I mean, I guess kind of to the extent that we've been talking about, or, you know, that Bill and I have mentioned in terms of how far we've gotten with it. So kind of the first thing that we're trying to achieve is, you know, like supporting dynamic services. That, you know, that's kind of like the larger context in which we're building up the OSGI capabilities. And so the service framework is based on having like an OSGI container with like a web application running in there that you can stream in bundles. They get deployed automatically, and then, you know, like that's kind of one, you know, that's sort of one interaction with that is, you know, like deploying and undeploying bundles through, you know, through the web application, which basically, you know, it just it's a, you know, some servlets that allow you to, you know, upload files and remove them, as well as, you know, describe what's in there, and then also just, you know, like we also have, and Bill's been doing this, like in terms of the replication. So those services, like a specific replication service, will be running and is at this moment to some extent running, just as a OSGI service.
Oh, okay.
Um,
Yeah, so I guess we haven't done a whole lot of, you know, real heavy-duty work, but it seems like we've done enough at this point to sort of just get a good feeling for what the capabilities are.
Yeah, I think there's one last note that I'll mention, just talking to the wiki page here, is that, so in terms of Spring DM, it seems like they're, at least that I'm familiar with, there are two main sort of Spring enabling type services. One is one that I already mentioned, where it's just called the basic Spring extender, which you throw a jar file into, or you throw a bundle into the container. It wakes up and it inspects that jar file and determines if it's, you know, like if it should be wired up with Spring or not. The other one is the Spring web extender, and so anytime you throw a bundle that has the WAR extension, this web extender service, it wakes up and it goes ahead and looks at that WAR file and tries to deploy it into like a Tomcat or a Jetty that's running in the container. So it's a way of dynamically allowing people to, you know, deploy web applications. But so it's as simple as that. It, whenever you drop a WAR in there, it tries to deploy it into another like Tomcat service. And sort of adding on that a little bit, and maybe Bill, you might want to just sort of talk in a moment about like configuration and the configuration admin. So once you do have a running service, you want to be able to dynamically configure it and change different parameters. And that's something that we're sort of actively working on right now. We haven't, you know, gotten any sort of concrete results out of it, but maybe you can talk potentially about that a little bit, Bill, in a second. But there's this concept of bundle fragments. And I guess this is a fairly critical distinction between the OSGI containers, namely that Apache Felix does not support fragments, whereas Equinox does. And what that means is that you have basically a bundle fragment. It's just a bundle, just like, you know, any other OSGI bundle, just a jar file, except it doesn't deploy on its own. It's sort of an attachment to an existing bundle that's already in the container. So the one context that we've used it so far is we go ahead and have our Tomcat service running, but by default, you know, Tomcat starts up on 8080. You can deploy a Tomcat bundle fragment that sets, you know, like any sort of server.xml type configuration information. So, you know, the fragment's in there and it specifies 8081, and so it the fragments allow you to make sort of it's not dynamic, it's, you know, like when it first comes up, configuration to existing bundles if those bundles, you know, are expecting it or support it.
So a fragment essentially is, if you take the bundle that it's going to connect to and just like grab all the files out of the fragment and push it into the host bundle and, you know, override anything that's, you know, the same, that, you know, and then start up the host bundle. That's essentially what it, you know, what the running instance is, you know, once you have the fragment attached.
Okay, so it's, you can do it, I mean, without anticipating that, you know, if I'm writing a bundle, as long as I make sure my configuration is, you know, somewhere inside that bundle, then anybody can write a fragment that overrides some of the default stuff, right?
Right.
Well, but the host bundle has to enable it.
Oh, okay. So
you have to allow for that sort of thing to happen.
And is that a matter of flipping a switch, or is it you pretty much have to think about, like, okay, here's what you can override and iterate it
versus just what it started to sound like was I could just kind of, I mean, essentially have a patch.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's sort of to that degree. Yeah.
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 It's a deploy time.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot with the fragments yet, but it seems like you just specify the points at which, you know, you want to allow fragments to come in and you know, override. And then the fragments kind of attach and override the stuff that you allow. As far as the configuration admin that Andrew was mentioning, that's essentially another bundle that is something that within your bundle you can be aware of the fact that you're expecting configuration to occur in your bundle, and so you can note that. This is how I'm expecting my configuration to come in. I'm expecting it from this configuration admin. And then you can sort of tell the configuration admin by pushing in a file that says, this is the configuration for this bundle. And it will update the configuration in that bundle. I've worked with it more with Spring DM integration. In Spring DM you have you can define your beans and you can wire in the properties of those beans. And then when the configuration admin gets updated, you can either do it as properties, like a POJO properties, or you can have it which get updated, or you can have it send in a separate method that gives you a map of all the updated properties, so that you can just do on the fly additions, or you can configure it to whether or not you want to allow configuration changes on the fly or not. Otherwise, it's just whatever's in there at startup. And then the configuration admin also holds on to that config, so if you restart the container, the configuration is still there for all the bundles that depend on it. I have yet to actually get that to work, though, so all of this at this point is reading about what it should do and attempting a deployment.
Yeah, and from my experience on that point, Bill, ultimately it tends to work, but sometimes it's a slog getting there.
Yeah, so just finishing up with the stuff on the page, the references are just sort of some of the things that Andrew and I have come across that have been helpful resources for both OSGI and Spring DM.
Cool. Well, this is a great overview. Certainly for me, who haven't dug in as much as you guys have. And as we were going along here in this discussion, I was thinking of the K2 design a little bit and kind of wondering what is it that that using Spring DM would take away from us? I mean, if let's say we started using it and playing with it in the Fedora design of the modules, what would we have a limited set of choices on
what containers we would be using for one?
No.
No,
it seems like all of them. I mean, essentially all you're doing is just deploying the Spring bundles into your container in order to use Spring DM. So, I mean, all of the containers support the Spring bundles just fine.
Okay.
I think the only hitch is the hitch that we brought up last week, which would be more on the developer side, where people who wanted to work with Fedora, say, to create bundles, and, you know, I mean, like, say, so someone from Sakai wanted to contribute, and you know, if we're sort of a Spring DM shop, then we'd want them to contribute accordingly, and so they'd have to at least get a little bit up to speed on writing additional Spring configurations. But
there's no reason why we couldn't support non-Spring DM
right.
bundles also.
Right.
So we.
But I think, although I imagine for consistency, you'd be kind of like that.
We want to.
Yeah, like we might standardize on it.
Right. But I don't think other than that, there's any drawback. I mean, again, like from a deployment end user sort of perspective, there's really no hitch. I think it would just be something maybe for contributors / developers as far as an extra step.
Yeah. In terms of development communities, I mean, we don't get the sense that there's like, you know, a whole group of Spring DM people and a whole group of OSGI, straight OSGI people that people can pretty much, you know, learn the other side. Or learn the, you know, straight OSGI way, or learn the Spring way, but it's not like we're cornering ourselves, you know, into Spring DM only community necessarily. You know.
Right.
In terms of the bundle repositories, because we could declare a dependency on a straight OSGI bundle, it doesn't seem like we're limiting ourselves that way either, right?
Right. Yeah, and actually, I mean, most of the jars, like in the, even in the Spring source repository, aren't Spring enabled. They're just, you know, the standard jar that you see in Maven Central, just with the manifest added.
Yeah. Bless you. Thank you. interesting. Well, this was really certainly helpful for me. I hope it was helpful for other folks who got in on the call. Did anybody want to bring up any other sort of side topics or questions on the OSGI, opinions on where we should go? I guess my feeling is we still need some more practice on wrapping Fedora as a full OSGI bundle, and certainly some more thoughts on how we're actually going to be modularized. I mean, a whole separate discussion, I think, is whether Fedora's existing modules are the right level of granularity. So we've got, I don't know, something like 10 different module interfaces. You know, is that the right level of granularity to think about putting bundles together to make Fedora do its job? Any gut feeling on that one, Eddie?
I haven't thought about it too much yet, but I mean, when I was thinking about this, so for this thing, this sort of thing I'm going to do with Aaron in Cambridge, because David was suggesting, you know, doing maybe something around ingest. So I was imagining, on the one hand, we might get more sort of community, outside community involvement, like just outside even the immediate Fedora DSpace communities, if we can figure out a way to deal with bundles such that the processing, like the picking apart of, in the ingest case at least, different input formats, was sort of separate from the piece that actually needs to translate the different ingest formats into something Fedora can understand, right? I mean, there's this level of just picking apart the different formats themselves, figuring out, you know, what, I mean, say, IEEE LOM, like dealing with that kind of metadata in a SCORM package or something like that. Like, this is mm-hmm. something that is logically separate from, right, the part that actually has to talk to Fedora or DSpace. And so, like, I mean, seems like there's something to be gained for splitting it apart, you know, a little bit further yet from just, say, the you know, Atom ingest bundle or the, you know, SCORM ingest bundle. And then that piece of it can be sort of more generally useful, and we might get, you know, more eyes on it or other developers on it, and we can figure out a way to separate out the Fedora-specific pieces of it. But, I mean, that was just something that was throwing around in my head. I have no concrete ideas about, you know, where you draw the line and how that line should be drawn. But it just seemed like there was sort of a further level of instruction to go after than just, you know, at least in the ingest case of the Fedora specific ingest files. And I'm, you know, I don't know how much of this then would apply to other sorts of modules that we have, but I guess my intuition is, you know, there may be some similar things that we might want to do there to keep the Fedora-specific stuff sort of as separate as possible to encourage. Not even just to encourage other community involvement in stuff that we do, but also just to be able to obviously use other stuff that's out there.
It seems like the further we break out the code base, the easier it will be to, you know, swap out parts or, you know, replace things and, you know, jump in on a small part as opposed to trying to deal with, you know, a large complex piece of work.
For example, I think I remember reading a while back about someone who'd the JCR, the Jackrabbit, someone who turned that into a bundle so that they could use it in their existing OSGI app. And so again, like, I mean, there have got to be these kinds of cases where people are using things like content repositories where, you know, they're developing tooling in their OSGI app around it. And that sort of tooling has got to have a lot of sort of common use cases that we can sort of take advantage of. Right, and I mean, it just seems like that seems like part of the end game for us, is to be able to get into the situation where, you know, we can sort of do less and less of the feature development ourselves, or at least make it so that the feature development is not so Fedora specific where it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, actually, ideally, it isn't Fedora specific. So, I think, you know, the next step for us, besides figuring out how to wrap Fedora as an OSGI bundle itself, is come up with a few possible futures of where we want to be module-wise. I mean, and we don't have to, you know, just take a guess and go, but maybe look at a few options and say, okay, what would happen if, you know, on one hand we just turned Fedora's modules into OSGI bundles. On the other hand, what if we said, let's do something completely different and, you know, have the storage or the persistence in Fedora mapped to JSR 170 period. And what kind of modules would fall out around that? I think there's...
Just going on that example, Chris, I mean, I think, like, for storage, it seems like we could very easily have, you know, several bundles, you know, one that's a Kubra, one that's sort of just base file store, you know, one that will end up being maybe DiraCloud or, you know, one, say, JCR, that's all working against a, you know, a single interface that, you know, Fedora, another bundle is expecting to be provided. And, you know, and that way you can do, you know, you can plug out or plug in, you know, whichever one of those that you, you know, prefer to use.
Yeah.
And it also makes it, you know, fairly simple for someone to come in and just write something totally different. Or maybe that's actually, you know, that's underneath the Kubra.
Yeah. It could be, but I mean, a Kubra could be still leveraged in other interesting ways. I mean, as sort of a low-level plug into JSR 172 for the blob aspect of the storage. Do we have anybody in this group today who has any experience with Sling, with Apache Sling?
No, but we've been talking to the folks doing the JCR tools and listening to their work on Apache Sling. So the understanding is pretty thin.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit.
So that's actually a good point. For anybody who hasn't seen this project, certainly be interesting for us to look at if anybody hasn't kind of checked it out. But there's this JCR Tools project, and I've actually got a link to their wiki on our wiki. It's in the community software registry, which I'm having trouble finding.
Next time we talk about this subject or JCR, I think they'd probably like to be included.
They're always included.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to paste the link off to the wiki. Community Software Registry has got links to various projects, but the it's under here it's listed as JCR Connect Adapter. So there's a group at Northwestern who's doing a larger project involving an architecture with Fedora, but one of the pieces that they're examining is how Fedora can actually itself provide a JCR interface. So that's interesting related work. And also in relation to Sling, there's of course the Sakai K2 project, which I'm fairly ignorant on, but I do notice every once in a while I'm following Aaron Sikorsky's Twitter, and I think he's got his head down in that pretty deeply, so we could probably get some interesting perspective from him too on why K2 is using Sling and what that provides for them. I already posted the link off to your first day with Sakai K2, but
Yeah, since the Sakai folks couldn't come on today, it certainly would be interesting to organize a dialogue.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I think for this week we can wrap up, but I just wanted to mention that next week we had talked about digging into the security issue that that we were talking about last week around, it was around actually APIA and APIM and what all that means. Any alternative proposals? If not, I think that topic could be a pretty rich area for discussion too, just in terms of merging APIA and APIM logically, and what that means for the Fedora REST interface, and especially access control. So,
be a good discussion.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, anybody have any parting words? Well, thanks a lot, everybody, and especially thanks to Eddie and Bill and Andrew for giving us your take on what you've experienced so far. I think that wiki page is really helpful, actually, and I want to go through and dig a little deeper on some of those things myself. So thanks for putting that together, and I guess we'll talk to you all next week.
All right. Thank you all.
Sounds good.
All right. Bye all.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.